Okay, good morning. So today we have the lecture on authentication. This is a lecture I inserted to the curriculum, so it was not in dedicated chapter from our textbook. But I feel this is very knowledge scope, very basic knowledge scope. You should familiar yourself with. So I added this lecture here, and mainly we will talk a little bit about some basic concept. So today we'll talk a lot about the concept like identities, identifiers, pseudonymous identifiers, if you found GDPR about this word, and what are differences and what are they really meaning to us in the context of the information system. And we will talk about authentication, what type of authentication method or way to authentications, like identity proofing, verification, identification, and what are the differences among these terms. Then we take a look at how many ways we can implement authentication. For example, we can use public crypto system to use private key, public key, and use them to implement authentication protocol. And the basic ones, password, of course. And we mentioned some weakness and the strengths of password. We'll take a close look today. And we can also have some good ideas like honeywords, how to protect our password. And some established password authentication protocols like SRP, I will mention this later. And think about the other scenarios that maybe multiple users want to share the same credential and how to split the secret. I feel this also could be interesting for you, so add the subsection secret sharing. We can also do some accesses. If we are winners, I can give you some bonus. And finally, we talk about biometrics. So identity, what is identity? And people can give us some opinion. What is your opinion? What is the concept of identity in your mind? Name? Relation to, okay. Thank you. Unique to individual. It need to be unique. Okay. Other opinions? So we saw some opinion. Identities can be anything, name, your house, your relation to other people. And also some people say they should be unique or might not so be unique. For example, okay. This definition is more professional. So everything that can be used to identify this person, right? Yes, this is the most closest one to the standard answer. When I say standard answer, because it has been standardized by ISO, of course you can define the term in your way, but this is the common way and the people have established a common understanding. So what is identity? For example, today I have this shirt. It's a green color. So can I say this is an identity for me? No? No? How many people think this can be an identity for me? Thank you. Two, okay. Three, okay, good. Let's take a look at the formal definition. So identity is defined as sets of attributes related to an entity. So we have those two keywords. What are attributes and what is entity? So entity is easy to understand. It can be a organization, it can be a person, it can be a laptop devices. They should also have their identity. And what are attributes? So the definition here, the attributes is very general. So indeed, it can include color or measured, right? If you look inside this teaching room, and people wearing the same color shirt as me, not exactly the same. I see some people, yeah, I'm green. But so green color in this case can be a little bit distinguishing attributes. Not that unique, because I see some students, you also have the screen shirt. But the number is very limited if you compare with all the number of all the audiences here. So if we say green shirt, then immediately you know we have, you narrow down the scope of the individual, right? So only one, two, or maybe three. And if you say it should be a blue trousers, can I ask if you also wear, okay, then I should look for another attribute, right? Brown shoes? No, okay. Then if you combine green shirt, blue trousers, and brown shoes. If you combine these three attributes, then this set of attributes is sufficient to identify Bian Yang, right, in this teaching room. So you understand the concept. What is the attributes? But if you say identity, any of these three attributes, we can say they are identity. So an entity has several nodes attached by this ISO definition. For example, entity can have more than one identity, of course. I have this three, right? Several identities can have the same identity, of course. For example, if we regard the screen shirt, we have one, two, three. At least three people in this room, we share the same identity. But, of course, you can have, as I mentioned, you can define it as your way. In ITOT, this is another standard, mainly for telecommunication industry. So if you look for a keyword identity there, they are really means unique identity. Or we say distinguishing identity. Entity, as I mentioned, it can be person, can be organization, device, subsystems. I don't want to mention more. And attributes, we already mentioned. So here is the formal definition. What is attributes? It is characteristic or properties of a entity that can be used to describe its state, appearance. So appearance or other aspects. And this is the term identifier. What is identifier? So if we talk about identifier, if you heard this word from speech from other people, in most cases, or if we look at the standard, identifier people means unique identity. And if we say unique identity, it still depends on the scope. Just now I used the example. I have this three color different variants on my body. So this is sufficiently to be a identifier, right? But only limited in this teaching room. You cannot generalize this concept outside this room, because if you found some people wear green shirt, blue trousers, and brown shoes, you can find a lot of people outside this room. So if we want to define identifier or unique identity, you also need to specify a scope, or is it domain? If we say some identity is unique or it is identifier, we should also explain the context, the domain we are talking about. Except the one term here, UUID. So now we talk about a lot of terms. UUID. So UUID is a universal unique. For example, any example? Passport? Yes. Any other example? Driving license with a number, unique number. Yes. And? Bank cards or credit cards number. We should not find a duplicate or same number on this planet. Social security number, probably yes. Plus the information you know which country, right? Birth certificate, yes. For all these IDs, you should have a unique ID. And if you use this outside Norway, it should be also unique, right? If you get a birth certificate. So we call it a UUID. So you see, basically we have this structure. Identity, it is the biggest scope. Then we have identifier or unique ID. Then we have UUID, right? Okay, to clarify, all these terms is very helpful when you read the articles, when you understand the systems, the mechanisms. Otherwise, it could be give you some confusion to understand all these terms. And also, it is related to the concept we want to discuss today. We talk about authentication. What is authentication? We can say it is a process to confirm identity. So the definition is very short. So it should be a process to confirm, to validate. This is the accurate and the genuine identity of a person. So here, if you find that here, the identity, we use identity, not identifier. So authentication can be a process to verify that Bian Yang is wearing a green shirt today. Right? This is identity, but not the identifier. And also it can be identifier. Bian Yang has a passport number, blah, 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 right? And now, if we talk about authentication, you may find some terms like identity proofing, identity verification, identity identification. First, I want to discuss these two, identity verification and identity identification. Because in most cases, we have these two. And identity proofing, we discussed this in the third place. So what is identity verification? For example, if you register an email account, first you need to do registration. You enrolled your personal data in the email service provider's server, right? So you give something there, including your username, and also you need to set up your password. So we call it enrollment or registration. And next time, if you want to use the services, you need to claim your ID. That is the process. You type in your username, and then followed by a password. Password is used to verify you are the owner of this username, right? So this is the process we call the verification. So you already have something in the database. And next time you want to use the services, you want to validate you are the owner of the ID. So we have database. Let's say usually we use SP. What is that? Service providers. So we use you, user. You enrolled, we call the enrollment or registration. Username plus password. So this is enrollment. Next time, you type in username plus password. This is what we call verification. This should not be database. This should be, for example, a portal. Right? And the portal receive the enrolled information from the database. And the portal compare these two information and generate some decision. So this is a very simple model of authentication based on identity verification based on password. So what is identification? Identification is a process that the system here, the portal, does not know whom this person is. For example, this person is not willing to disclose his or her identity. And in which scenarios, application scenarios, we can face some situation? A user would not want to disclose his or her identity. Any idea? Nothing? Web pages. Or any other cases, the users actually they don't want to use the services, but the services want to identify this person. Okay. Yes. Yes, you are right. So they collect the personal information, then they can using data mining skills to identify which customer it is. True. And the other example, actually we found a lot of examples in law enforcement, right? For example, some suspect was caught by police. Police want to identify who this guy is by fingerprint or by other information. So this process is also a process we call identification. And you can always assume the suspect will not disclose his or her general identity in this case. But the police want to use a database and capturing any personal information and compare this capture the information into all the entries in the database and identify and make decision who this one is. So this we call identification. So if we compare the two, verification is a process. We compare one record to another record. Why? Because for verification, the user is always claim who she or he is. With this information, you can retrieve the personal information, the corresponding record from the database, and compare these two. So it is one versus one. For identification, you don't have this ID claim. You have only database. So you capture the identity, any types of identity attributes, and find it, search the database to make decision. So it is one versus N. So do memorize this difference in your mind. And another question is, if for example, if you want to apply for an email account, in this case, you register personal information into the service providers. That is no problem, because most of the email service providers, they really don't care your general identity. We say your UUID, they don't care. You can use a pseudonym, right? Or any other type of IDs. But for other services, like for example, social benefit, you know enough, if you want to claim some social benefit, they really need to verify you have the correct ID, right? And how to do this? This process we call trust establishment. You have to make enough to trust you. You are the person you are claiming. So this is the process we call identity proofing. Normally, this should be happened before enrollment, right? Because you need to establish the trust with the service providers, and then the service providers can be confident to register personal information in their systems. So before enrollment, we do remember, normally for some sensitive services, not sensitive, but for some special services, you need to do identity proofing. Another example is you are a Norwegian citizen, and how many of you do not have yet the passport? Okay, then you should apply for a passport if you want to go outside Norway for travel, right? Okay. Yeah, of course. Of course. So this should not be a big problem for you because you are already adults. But if young people never going outside Norway and they want to travel outside Norway, they should have a passport. But how to prove his or her identity in Norway? Show a picture. But how you can convince the officer this picture corresponding to the name. Yes, of course. Yeah, this is the process we call identity proofing. Identity proofing is you need to establish this trust in the first step. Birth certificate, but there's no picture on birth certificate. How can? Okay. Great. So parents can verify their relationship to the baby, and so parents can show their passport identity. This is a way. Bank card. So with bank card, you have some photo and your personal number and your name. Yes, could be a way. Text card. Your text card, do you have a face or other? Okay. So yes, correctly. So the essential thing here in this case is the personal number, right? Because in Norway you have this national registry. All people, they have a personal number there. So the personal number is the identifier. So if you can prove that you have this personal number, you can prove the remaining everything, right? Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Look alike. If you look like other thing, you can claim you have the number. Yes. So always we don't have the 100% of security. But in this case, this is just example. If you are a young people is going to apply for a passport, he or she needs might be, for example, the personal number or a photo ID. A ID with personal number with a face. Or if you don't have this, you have to invite your parents to verify the relationship by a birth certificate, yes, mentioned by some people, and your parents' passport or other photo ID. So this is a process we call the identity proofing. Once the child get the passport, then we don't have this anymore. So we have only verification or identification, right? In the following applications, life cycle. So this is the difference of the three terms I want to help you understand. Still any questions? Or okay, we continue to some more technical aspects. How to do authentication. So the first way is very straightforward. Did you have the practical session by on SSH already? Not yet? Okay. So maybe some of you know the SSH, how to authenticate the user to the server, to the remote server. They are using this protocol enabled by this public crypto systems, right? So first step, you generate a key pair, public key and private key. Then you register your public key in the remote authentication server. You keep your private key because it's a private key. You should carefully keep it. Do not disclose it to other people or publish it. And next time, you can use your private key to authenticate yourself. And here in this scenarios, we call the PKI-based authentication. The private key is, for example, is to certified by CA to be you. But actually, namely, if you look at the certificate show public key, because the public key is linked to the private key. And public key can be public, as we can see from the name. So the certificate say this public key is belonging to Bian Yang. So if you disseminate the certificate, all the people know, okay, this public key is linked to me. So I can use the corresponding private key to prove I'm the Bian Yang, I'm the person. And so the most simple protocol is we call the challenge response. So you for the user. Authentication server. You have a private key. And you registered your public key here. So what could be the process to do the authentication? The most simple case. That is, authentication server sends you a random number we call S. We call the challenge. And you can use your private key to do encoding by your private key of this S. And you send this back. Right? And with the public key, the authentication server can decrypt this to get S. So he can compare the S recovered if it is equal to the random number it's sent to the user. If they matched, okay, they think this is the correct user. So this is a simple way But we also see some challenge. The challenge is the private key is normally quite long. For example, for RSA, we use 1024 bits or even 2048 bits. It's not easy for people to memorize this long series of bits, right? So private key is not password. Password is something that you can remember. Private key, normally, I doubt some people can remember them. So you have to store them in some places, either by another type of encryption, for example, use AES, and you use a passphrase to decrypt this and get your private key. Or you use something like one-time padding, use exclusive OR to combine your passphrase and this private key. But in this case, because normally entropy of password is low, so whether this combination is a security is a still big question there. This is one challenge, how to manage your private key. The other thing is, if you change to another device, you always need to export this private key, and of course your certificate as well, and move it to another device. It's not so convenient. So for a very convenient system, people still think password is convenient, right? Because you just need to memorize some passphrase that it is memorable, and next time you type it. If we talk a password-based authentication, basically we need to pay attention to two type of password-based authentication systems. One is we call standalone system. What is standalone system? Like ATM? The ATM machine for you to extract your cash, or we say if you go to the Gardermoen airport, if you come outside Norway and enter Norway, there are two options for you to check your passport, you know, right? One is by, you can go through some post with some manual officer to manually check it. The other option is you can see some gate. We call the automated border control, ABC. So you found some terminal there, you can scan your passport, and probably they will take a picture of your face and compare the feature extracted from your captured face and the feature extracted from the digital face samples stored in your passport. If they match, you can go. So throughout this process, there's no people attending you. So we call it the ABC. It is a integrated system. Okay. Yeah, of course you have to have a... I doubt in Norway the current system they compare fingerprint, but a face, yes. According to ICAO standards, they put face as a as obligatory data, so you have to put a face there, but the fingerprint is optional. So different member states, they have different policies. I don't remember what is the situation in Norway, but this is in general. But anyway, we call it standalone systems. What does it mean? It is a whole, you can see it is like a black box. It is a whole system. And it has its own interface. The interface, the user interact with the interface to verify your identity. So there's no remote communication channels. And we assumed all the subsystem. Of course, you can find some subsystem here. Some system is in charge of taking personal input. Other system, for example, in charge of processing the data, algorithms. Other system, for example, for comparison. The other system for to reach a decision. And all the connection of the subsystems, we assume they are secure. It's not always secure, but it is. We assume it is secure because the security of the system, it is outside the scope of authentication, right? It is a software, operating system, hardware. But in this case, we assume they are same. So in this case, if the user uses a password, and it should be have a database in the system. The simple way is you just store the hashes of the password. And normally this is enough. Next time the user presents a password and the system calculates the hash and compare the new hash with the record. If they match, they think the user can be authenticated. So this is very simple to understand. However, this is not secure if we use this method to the scenario of remote authentication. That is the other scenario we call the remote authentication. That is the second category, or authentication to a remote system. So what type of examples? For example, the online services, email account, online email, or VPN, remote access control. Every time you need authenticate yourself while a internet connections, it might be a scenario we need remote authentication. Why? The password, the hashed password storage in this case on a remote server is not secure for a scenario of remote authentication. Any idea about this? Because here in the standalone systems, we assume the connections here in the subsystem, they are secure. But by internet, we say internet is open environment. You never can assume this. Actually, you should not assume this, right? You should always assume the connection between the user. The user can use a laptop, for example, with a server in a remote place by internet. So the connection, you should always assume a lot of attacks to this communication channel. Yes. By other people. Yes. So if you want to use internet is an easy way to establish connection because it is an infrastructure nowadays, every corner. And I even heard this news from, I don't know from when, very soon, in EU, all the public places, they should be provided with free Wi-Fi. You know this? It will be coming to reality very soon. So the infrastructure there, internet, Wi-Fi, wireless connection, they are infrastructure almost free today. Every people access and use it for communication. The only thing is the security, because it is not designed for specific application you are intended to, right? It is for general public. So you have to think about the connection, security about this during this connection. And yes, I think I will mention Honeywell a little bit later after this password authentication protocols. So most of the simple way. So look at the slides. This is still the naive way. It's still not secure. You store all the plain text password in the server aspects. So in this scenario, the user wants to use password to authenticate him or herself to the server. And the server maintain at least a table of all customers' password. Very stupid way, but it can happen today still. And of course, there were some concerns. The first concern is the communication channel is open. There's no protocol here to protect the communication. The second concern is they should not be plain text password. At least they should be hash, right? Okay, then we use hash. We can consider hash. As I mentioned, if you use hash of the password, it is still not secure in the scenarios. Why? Because the communication channel here, it is not under the control of the service providers. It is a public infrastructure. So from the perspective of the server, communication channel here, it is not safe. And also the user, the software, the client, for example, the laptop or the browser, it is also outside the control of the service providers. So from the perspective of service provider, from the perspective of here, this end, the laptop and the browser might not be secure enough as well. So both here and the communication channel is not under control. So the thing is, for example, if the user got the hash's value of the password, in this case, he can send, or the attacker can send these hashes instead of the password, right? So as an attacker, I don't need to know the genuine user's password. I just need the hash value, and send this hash value to the server. If they match, okay, I can impersonate the genuine user. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I described this attacking scenario. It actually implies two things. One thing is the server database can be compromised. Second thing is interception of the communication channel can be implemented. It can be eavesdropping, just in listening to the communication channel in a passive way, or it can be a man-in-the-middle attack. You can even modify the communication channel, the data in the communication channel. So, we mentioned this challenge response protocol. So, suppose next time you already get a hash, right? As we mentioned, you can use this for next time and the next time and impersonate the genuine user. So a good way to get some improvement is we can use this challenge response protocol. For example, if you get a hash of the password, then we can design a protocol. Every time the user can send a different hash values. Then if you get just one fixed hash, it does not work because every time for each different transactions, the hash value used for authentication, they should be different. So if you get the hash value in this transaction, it will not work for next transactions, right? This is a good idea. And how to implement this? We can use this challenge response-based protocol. So it's very similar to here. So every time you send a different S, but here, in the database, we will do not directly use the hash. Yes, we will store the hash of the password. Here, P is the password. For the database, we store this hash. But the authentication server will not compare the hashes directly, but it can send ask here, and if the password know, if the user know, the password, then he can generate this hash first of the password, right? And then generate another hash incorporating the dynamic parameter send. Every time S is different. And another hash can be generated. So you, if you can send this value is every time is different. Why? Because every time you receive different S. And here on this end, the authentication server can calculate this hash value with S as well. So they can compare. This one is to the hash values from this one. If they match, okay, they think this is the correct user. So we call it a challenge response. It at least it is better than the hash-based case, because every time you save different hash, even one hash is leaked, the user does not know. They cannot use one hash from one specific transactions for the other following transactions. Still, I would say there was some drawback. The first drawback is we called password equivalent attack. The assumption we think this protocol is working is that this hash is intercept, because the data that was really sent is this hash. It's not hash P, right? So in the communication channel, this value can be captured, but no problem, because this value changes every time. But if the database is leaked, and this hash is leaked, then every time attacker can always, because the attacker have already this value. Every time the attacker does not need to intercept the communication channel, he or she just need to calculate the hash together with the dynamic parameters and generate a new hash. And it will always work. So we call it, we call this tag as password equivalent attack, because the attacker does not need to know the password itself, just need to know the password equivalent, which is the hash of the value. So the challenge response protocol is still not working for this type of attack. And still, if another scenario is even this protocol is working, and now the user already authenticated, get authentication from the server aspects, then what can the following action? Normally, the data can be transmitted, right, between the two parties after authentication. Then, if some man-in-the-middle attack can happen, or just interception, it can be eavesdropping, it can be man in the middle. So after authentication, the data transmission can start. And data can always send to the people in the middle. So that indicates one thing. If in the future you want to work on, you want to implement some authentication protocols for remote authentication, do not forget one thing. After you finish the implementation of remote authentication protocol itself, and you also need to take care of the following transmissions of the data. And a better way is authentication protocol can generate a shared secret. So here we finish the authentication, right? Protocol. So if this is the user, this is authentication server. So step one, authentication, no problem. We can use different protocols to do this. And after this, step two, we call the, for example, business transaction. That is related to the specific services provided by the server. But between these two, do not forget one thing. It always needs a secret. Establishment between the two parties. So we can find a lot of protocols. For example, this SRP, we call the Secure Remote Password Protocol. It can be used to authenticate the two parties. That is the first step. After the step, it generates a secret. The secret is unique, and every time it can be different between the two parties. So the two parties can use this secret to generate, we call the session keys, to ensure the following, the second step, business transaction is also protected. So even here, there's a man-in-the-middle attack. That's not work because the party to do the interception always get encrypted data because the party in the middle does not know the secret established by the two parties. So this is very important for you to know that authentication itself should always need to be combined with consideration of other the following secret establishment method to ensure the following transaction can be secure as well. We can have a 10 minutes break now, and then we come back to another interesting protection method we call the Honeywort. Okay, we continue our lecture. We talk about the remote authentication in the first half, and we have some really good secure protocols for password remote authentication and also how to establish the secret as the next step between the two parties, like SRP can do. SRP has been standardized and be incorporated into TLS nowadays, but it is option. You can use it or you can choose not to use it, but I can always recommend you to use it because it's quite a good password-based authentication protocol. Now we come back to another topic. We call it Honeywort. The method is addressing the model. Just now we talk about standalone. So we have a user. We have an integrated system. And communication channel, basically we think there's no communication channel, just an interface. Like our laptop, if you log in your laptop or smart devices, you have this login window to do this. So we call it interface. There's no remote or internet connection here. So as we mentioned, this case is very clear. You can use hash to store the password and the people typing the correct password to the system. If the two hashes match, then authentication can be successful. But only one concern. The concern is not every people, users, they are expert in using advanced or complicated password. So a lot of password can be just 123 QWE, something like this. And this costs the one thing. The hash of a simple password can be easily guessed, right? This is what we call dictionary attack. So dictionary attack means you maintain a table. You capture some popularly used password in one column, the table. In another column, you calculate the hash of this popular words. And next time, you just you can, for example, find a hash leaked from the system. Then you compare this hash to the table. Table with words, hashes. So if the hash is accidentally matched to one of the hashes in the table, you can immediately find the words. So the words could be the password. So this is an easy attack. And how to the question is how to protect this table. So that comes all the idea of Honeywort. So for example, this table we have user. Of course, in the table there's no words. Sorry, only hash, right? User name and hashes. If you find the hashes, you correct it using the dictionary attack and you reverse to the password. And the idea of Honeywort is instead of store only one hash, you can store a lot of other hashes as well. This is, for example, hash 1, hash 2, hash 3, let's say hash n. Just for example, n equals 10. Then for each user in the authentication server, not authentication, in the system, the hash table has 10 hashes. So if this table is leaked to the attacker need to make a decision. Which hash out of the 10 is the genuine hash? And in this case, for example, if we say this hash is a genuine one, we call it a sugar word. And for others, they are artificial. They are faked hashes from faked, from artificial password. We call it honey words. So the concept is very similar to the concept of a honeypot, right? If the attacker get into the system, he will see a lot of hashes. He or she will find difficulty to make decision which one is the genuine one. And the next time, if it just pick up one, try his luck, pick up one hashes, and the probability of the match is 1 divided by n. So it generates some difficulty for the attackers in this case. The problem is, if you want to design the honey words, what type of honey words are you going to add there? From the perspective of the attacker wants to distinguish the sugar words from the honey words, right? So from the perspective of defender, you need to think about how to make them not distinguishable, right? They should be look very similar. So this is one thing, how to for example, we say just for example, this red words is the generating the existing password, and you calculate the hash, put it there, and you can similarly to make other artificial password and calculate the hashes and make them together in the storage. And the advantage is it is really security based on, we call it information theoretic security. It is not like we call the computational hardness based security. You know, RSA or other public key systems, they use this computational complexity. But here, it is divided by n, and if you cannot distinguish the genuine one among the others, then all these passwords, they have equal probability to be the genuine one from the perspective of attacker. So we call this information theoretical security because you cannot distinguish. I believe you get the sense from previous week's lecture, right? Why the one-time padding is secure, because you cannot distinguish the correctly decrypted result from other type of wrongly decrypted results. And we can also use similar idea in biometric system. For example, if you store a lot of faces under the name of one person, then it will generate more difficulty for attacker to know which is the correct faces. And we, some of the students here already implement this idea in their research. And as I mentioned, the key problem is you want to put the honey words here. The honey words should be very similar to the generate, to the sugar words. Otherwise, it will be very easy for attacker to identify which is the honey words, which is the sugar words, which are the honey words as well. Then, for example, We can do this a small exercise. If you have a pen and a paper, just write one password, any type of password. It should be not that easy, but also it should be easy to memorize to you. And then you can invite your neighbor to add another four. We call the honey words. And then you circle your sugar words, which is your password. And then if you want to send it to me, then I can put them on the blackboard. You are all invited to make a tag to distinguish, to try to distinguish which is the genuine one and which are the added one, okay? You can use 5 minutes to do this. If you need some paper, or I can provide you some piece of paper if you need. Any people want to volunteer to share your results with me? You need a couple more minutes? Or? Okay. Now the intention is you should put some honey words which looks like the generic one. So if I'm an attacker, I cannot distinguish. The users. Mm-hmm. No, it's just random words. Probably. Yes. So it is. It depends on probability. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Can I? Okay. Okay. Any people want to volunteer as well? I can choose the three out of these, and we can launch an attack. Okay, so now our task is to try to identify the generating the sugar words from the honey words. So together we can go through the first user. Five passwords here. Which one could be the generating one, the sugar one? So we can have a voting. How many of you vote this one? This one? No? Zero? Okay. This one? Wow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This one? 1. This one? 1, 2, 3, 4. And this one? 1, 2, 3. Okay. The statistics show us that this one could be the most probable sugar honey words, right? Let me check. I forgot. Yes. How can you identify this? Look at the pattern. But we have this one similar. Okay. Then you choose either this one or this one, right? Okay. Marvelous. I cannot identify this actually. So you are more expert. So this one is the expert. And this one? How many for this one? No? One, two, okay. Second one? One, two, three, four, five. This one. One, two, three, four, five. And this one. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seems that this one should be the... Why we have only four? Okay, we really have four. But the correct answer... Can the user identify the correct user, the correct one? It's the first one, yes. So, yes. Your neighbor, who is your neighbor to add this word? Successful. You are successful in this case. Great. So this is a very successful case from the perspective of a defender. This is also a successful case for the perspective of attacker. Right? Okay. And how many for this? No? Zero? Okay. This one? One, two? This one? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven? Oh, okay. This one? Wow. One, two, three, four, six, seven, eight. Oh. No? Okay. So it could be either this one or this one, right? Let me check which is the correct one. Yeah, almost. This one. So I would say this is the winner. And this is almost good. This is, you see some problem here. So see, not everyone, they can generate honey words in a very good way, right? Because if you generate it by human, they always have some bias or some concept in your mind, and the password they generated, it could be not that easy to be undistinguishable from the already existing password. So a research topic is how to automatically to generate these honey words, make them undistinguishable from the generic one. And I think we can use some machine learning technologies to model how the original user, they generated their generic words. And then we can mix them together. I want to stress why the honey words can be helpful. First, suppose if in the system the hash table or the hash stored in the system are leaked. And one thing is, how can you identify the password is leaked? How can you detect this? So honey words can help here. So next time you have an attacker, the attacker have to guess one out of the N password, right? If the first try failed, then the system know, okay, our old password has already been leaked. Then we can update the password. Yeah, exactly. Yes, this is my point. So this is a good way, honeywords is a good way to detect the leakage of password. And we already go through this remote password authentication server. And we still have 13 or 15 minutes. I want to finish the secret sharing part. And we don't have time for the biometrics, but the biometric slides I prepared for previous lectures, they are very rich information. And I believe it is also easy to understand. I leave it to you as a homework. Go through all the slides about the biometric part. But in the remaining time, we come to the secret sharing technology. I invite you to take a look at the video clip. This is a video clip to illustrate the main idea of secret sharing. So why we need this technology and what type of challenge it can address? you can use any three of them to reconstruct the secret. So this is fantastic if you want to share the secret among different people or among different places. And we don't have time to go to the biometric part, but you go through the parts. If you have any questions, send me email. And I leave this as also a homework to you, this page. So we have these five shadows. 10, 19, 20. And try to use the method introduced in the video clip or in the previous slides here. There were some equations. And send me the secret you recovered. And if your recovered secret is correct, and I can register your name in a list and send the list to the cantina, so you will earn a free lunch next week. Okay? Yeah, I will send the yes, that is the case. So send me your recovered secret. Good idea. That's it. See you.